This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I think it's almost naive of people to expect democracy to take root quickly and for it to develop a stable democratic system, given everything that it's been up against and the fact that it's had so little experience with functional democracies.
That was the Atlantic Council's Michael Shurkin, who says he is not surprised to learn Burkina Faso's junta foiled a coup yesterday. Details coming up. Also, Gabon's prime minister says sanctions and other pressures could devastate the economy. And the indictment of a ranking senator for allegedly taking bribes from Egypt has prompted calls to rethink U.S. military aid to Cairo. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Burkina Faso's military junta says it thwarted a coup attempt yesterday, reporting that officers and others had plotted to destabilize the country with what it called the dark intention of attacking the institutions of the republic. Few details were available, although a prosecutor said in a statement today that four officers were detained for questioning. Michael Shukrin, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and an expert on the Sahel, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the report is not surprising, given that two coups in the West African country last year were triggered by a worsening insurgency by groups that have ties to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State.
There are two large insurgent groups, and they are absolutely destroying the place. And Ouagadougou is effectively, the capital is effectively encircled. And slowly but surely, I expect the jihadists to tighten the noose. And because of this pressure, there is, I think we're going to see a growing sense of frustration and desperation. And this is going to shorten people's patience, some people's patience with the regime, while giving other people ideas about how maybe they could do things better. Or maybe the impatience of some creates an opportunity for others to take over simply for purely personal ambition. And it's really struggled with democracy, and I think it's almost naive of people to expect democracy to take root quickly and for it to develop a stable democratic system, given everything that it's been up against and the fact that it's had so little experience with functional democracies.
Would you say that this junta, given all those challenges they're facing, have they made anything better for the ordinary citizen?
I don't think they have. Now, it's not for lack of trying. The Burkinabe government has put into effect a number of measures attempting to improve the security forces, improve their performance, improve their ability to coordinate with one another. They've done a number of things that you can point to and say, good. So it's not like they're just sitting on their heels doing nothing. Part of the problem is that a lot of what they've done simply isn't enough. And we could also point to the fact that by expelling the French, they have deprived themselves of an important ally in the fight against the jihadists. But another problem is that the challenges that this country faces are so great that even if the regime were to be doing all the right things for all the right reasons, it's still hard to imagine that it would succeed, or rather that it would succeed quickly. It just would take time. It's the scale of the problems that are just, they're so huge.
Would it be the same, do you think, if they still had a democratically elected leader in charge of the country?
Yes and no. I mean, the main advantage of a democratic leader, I think, ultimately, is that the regime, the government, potentially would have more legitimacy, at least in the eyes of some of the public, but also that it would have more legitimacy in the eyes of the international community. The United States and also France would be much more open to working with them and supporting them, whereas right now, well, France has been kicked out, the United States is basically kind of trying to keeping a distance because of our own laws that prevent us from providing security assistance to military dictatorships or coups, governments that come about through a coup d'etat. That being said, the previous president, Roch Kabore, who was democratically elected, by all accounts, he was a very decent guy. He was doing his best. He was out of his depth in terms of the kind of jihadist, dealing with the jihadist insurgency.
A colleague here at VOA said one of his college professors some four decades ago predicted that in the not too distant future, you're going to see all of Africa being run by either a military junta or some kind of puppet figure that is kind of installed by the military junta. What do you think about that?
Unfortunately, I'd say that is all too plausible, but I would caution listeners to remember that having successful liberal democracy is extremely difficult. And before you have a successful liberal democracy, you have to have a liberal democratic political culture that takes a very long time to take root.
That's Michael Shorkin, an expert on the Sahel and a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Damme here in Washington. U.S. prosecutors have indicted Senator Bob Menendez, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, for allegedly accepting gold bars and hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash in exchange for wielding his influence to aid the Egyptian government. That's prompted calls in the U.S. Congress for the Biden administration to rethink $235 million in military aid to Cairo. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, who chairs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's Middle East Subcommittee, said he hoped the committee would investigate the allegations and Egypt's involvement. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi discussed these developments with Tom Davis, a former Republican congressman.
On its face, it appears to me that the aid to Egypt was probably going to go through anyway, that it probably may not have made a material difference in terms of the outcomes. You know, what is, I think, concerning is the fact that he's receiving these gifts and not reporting them, and that's a violation of U.S. law. But Egypt had a lot of friends in the Congress. These issues did go before his committee. He could have stopped them, but I think there was a wide consensus at this point to help. So we'll just have to wait and see if there was any, what we call a quid pro quo on this. It's not clear at this point until we get more information.
Representatives Don Beyer, a Democratic House of Representatives member and co-founder of the Congressional Egypt Human Rights Caucus, said Egypt is conducting an espionage operation within the U.S. Senate and Washington should respond. Would Congress take action if Egypt proved to be culprit in this case?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time something like this has happened. And I would say to my friend Don Beyer, we don't know what information Egypt received outside of the fact that they found out how many employees there were at the American Embassy in Cairo. That seems to be, at least on the face of the complaint, the information that was given out. It's not labeled top secret. It's information that a member could have and could give somebody else. The problem is that under any kind of quid pro quo for that makes it probably a crime. So I think Congress will look at this at this point and make a decision. Was there further questions that Egypt was getting, issues that Egypt was getting at by having been close to the senator and giving him money? And I think that remains to be seen at this point. We'll see how this unfolds in court.
The Egyptian media denied that Egypt is involved in the bribe case and tried to portray this case as a political game in America to affect the Senate balance in favor of the Republican Party. Is that a possibility?
I don't think so. New Jersey is a pretty solidly Democratic state. The last time Senator Menendez ran, he had had a hung jury in his trial. He had ethics issues against him, and he won by 10 points. New Jersey is, as I said, a solidly Democratic state, and it seems in all likelihood that if Senator Menendez goes, his successor will be a Democrat. So I don't think it's likely to affect the outcome in the Senate.
How do you explain that nothing is coming from the Republican members of the Congress on that case?
There's an old saying that when your opponent is committing Harry Caray, you don't stand in their way. And right now, this is a Democratic problem, and Republicans want to keep it that way. Let the Democrats attack their own. Republicans don't need to pile on. Also, there's a principle here. An indictment is nothing more than an allegation. In America, the burden of proof comes at a trial when the senator will be able to rebut some of that evidence, cross-examine witnesses and the like. And if you rush to judgment just because someone somewhere indicts you, that's a tough precedent to go. There are innocent people that come out of indictments sometimes. And to have them give up a Senate seat and the like and make that the criteria, I think, is some alarm. Democrats are trying to put some distance between themselves and Senator Martinez. Both political parties like to think that they're the honest party, the other party is the corrupt party. So I think the rush to judgment on the Democratic side is to move him aside and move on to the next issue and show you they're tough on this. The senator is not going to go anywhere. In any kind of a plea bargain at this point, having a Senate seat is a chip. is something you want to use. So let's say, for example, if the evidence is overwhelmingly against the senator, instead of going to trial, part of what he could offer up is, I'll resign my Senate seat. You can put my head on the mantle, and that may save him years in prison or a large fine or something. Who knows? So my advice to anybody in that situation is, don't give up your seat. That's a chit you have to bargain with the prosecutors.
That was Tom Davis, a former Republican Virginia congressman, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawy. VOA has also requested an interview with former Democrat Virginia congressman Jim Moran, but he instead sent these remarks. Bob's actions are inexcusable. Egypt is as culpable as Menendez in this and should also be accountable, particularly because we have given billions of dollars to Egypt, allegedly to promote democracy and human rights, and Sisi has done neither. Five African countries have announced support for Somalia's request of a 90-day pause and the drawdown of 3,000 African Union peacekeepers. In a letter sent to the UN Secretary General and the current Security Council President, the countries contributing troops, Kenya, Ethiopia, Djibouti, Burundi, and Uganda, expressed strong support for the Somali government's request. The request followed recent military setbacks on the front lines in the battle of the Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab militant group. Somalia said it is still committed to the full withdrawal of AU forces by December 2024. The letter obtained by VOA commends Somalia for accelerating military offensive operations against Al-Shabaab. Gabon's prime minister says international sanctions and pressure for a return to constitutional order could be devastating to the country's economy. He also says the military junta needs time to carry out reforms and a national dialogue before a projected return to civilian rule. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Speaking to reporters Wednesday, Gabon's Prime Minister Raymond Dong Sima said he wants to remind the world that by seizing power, the military saved the Central African states from a civil war. He said Gabon's political opposition was ready to take up arms and defend its victory after ousted President Ali Bongo Ondimba orchestrated alarming fraud and declared himself the winner of the August 26 presidential election.
Nous prenons la direction de revenir à la norme, à ce qui est normal.
Sima said the international community and friendly countries should be compassionate and stop all sanctions they have already imposed or are planning to impose to press for a return to constitutional order in Gabon. The prime minister said Gabon will have challenges developing its economy and fighting poverty if foreign pressure and sanctions are not rapidly removed. Contested results indicate 69-year-old Albert Ondo Osa, leader of Gabon's main opposition group Alternance 2023, won the August 26 election. But soldiers announced on national television on August 30 they had seized power. The designation of General Brice Clotaire Oligingema, head of the Republican Guard, as president sparked an international outcry for a return to constitutional order. This week, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced the suspension of what he called certain foreign assistance programs to Gabon, pending a review of the circumstances that led to the ouster of President Bongo, who had ruled Gabon since 2009, when he succeeded his late father Omar Bongo. The State Department said the suspension would not affect U.S. government operations in the oil-producing Central African nation, but did not elaborate on what U.S.-funded programs would be affected or how much money would be placed on hold. Sima, speaking in Gabon's capital Libreville, said the country's military junta should be allowed to undertake initiatives to restore stability, carry out institutional and legislative reforms, fight corruption, ensure sustainable economic development, and conduct a national dialogue before organizing elections. Sima did not say how much time the military junta needs to carry out the reforms and return power to civilians. Telesphore Ondo is a public law lecturer at Omar Bongo University in Libreville.
Je pense que la deuxième étape va être d'organiser de manière formelle une...
Ondo tells Gabon State TV that the Central African State military leader needs time and resources to carry out consultations and organize a national dialogue that will reconcile civilians who are angry over the Bongo family's close to 60-year rule that did not develop the oil-producing nation. He says during the consultation and dialogue, the military junta should make it known if it needs 1, 2, or 3 years to return to civilian rule. France, China, Russia, the United Kingdom, and Canada are among nations along with the U.S. that have expressed concerns about the military junta taking over in Gabon and are asking for a return to normalcy. Similar requests have come from the United Nations, two Central African regional blocs, and the African Union. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Nigerian Senator Ireti Kingibe, a member of the opposition Labour Party, is among the only three women in the upper chamber of the lawmaking body. She's the chairperson of the Senate's Women's Affairs Committee and has launched initiatives to help women and girls in the Federal Capital Territory. In an interview with VOA's Peter Kloti, Kingibe discussed several topics, including her legislative priorities.
I'm the chairperson for Women Affairs. So I created something I call GRIT, which is gender inclusivity for development. Now, basically, I'm trying to ensure that in every committee in the Senate, there's a gender aspect. So you are in maritime. How? What have you done for women? Ecology. How? So basically, when I put it all in place, it would be gender mainstreaming to begin with. Secondly, legislating women in governance. Unfortunately, Nigeria ranks last in Africa and 182 using the Ninth Assembly statistics in 186 country in terms of women in governance and in politics. Now, I think the time is right for us to actually legislate 35% women involvement across board in governance and in politics.
Does that mean that if the women do not necessarily belong to your party, they will not have that opportunity.
Oh, no. They will. It's supposed to be, it's nonpartisan. Okay. To begin with, I have been a beneficiary of women supporting women regardless of party. I must say I got a lot of support from women regardless of their parties. And there seems to be a new awareness of women actually supporting women. At least in Nigeria, I see that, because it's the only way we're going to effect this change. And I also, now that I'm a senator and also the leader of my party in the FCT, I intend to involve a lot of women in terms of giving them financial assistance, political assistance, whatever is necessary to get women involved in the politics in order that they can also emerge. There are 62 wards in FCT. Right now, I think maybe we have one or two female councillors out of the 62, and that's really terrible. So I'm looking at least 40%.
That was Nigerian Senator Ireti Kingibe, who is among the only three women in the upper chamber of the lawmaking body and is a chairperson of the Senate's Women's Affairs Committee. Zimbabwean businesswoman from the country's Matabeleland provinces this week graduated from a business training program sponsored by the United States Embassy to enhance their business skills. Kudzenai Musengi has this report from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
It was palpable happiness among the 38 graduates of the Academy of Women Entrepreneurs, or AWE, as they received their certificates of attendance in Zimbabwe's second biggest city, Bulawayo. The women are a part of the 2023 cohort of the U.S. Embassy-funded Academy, which selects 100 business women from across the country each year to equip them with business skills using both in-person and online courses. 43-year-old Patience Kasere is from the small mining town of Wange in the country's northwest. Kasere began her automotive battery retail business in 2017 and has been expanding it. She was one of the two recipients of $1,000 in seed money for her business. Kasere also received a special commendation for running a business in an ethical and responsible way, as she provides a much-needed service in a rural community.
We retail automotive and solar batteries and accessories. So I started off doing automotive batteries only. Then from 2021, that's when I realized that in Binda, we also have a shop, and they are in need of small solar installations, small solar accessories, small solar batteries and lights that can help them to have lighting systems, charge their phones, have their kids study at night. So I decided to also expand into solar.
38-year-old Tariro Chaniwa is a popular musician known by the stage name Tarirone Gitare. She runs an arts events and promotions company.
I came across AWE, which is the Academy of Women Entrepreneurs, which was quite appealing to me because it was specifically for women and it had business principles. And I felt I was at a stage that I needed to upscale my business and to at least set the right structures. And this seemed like a pretty perfect fit for what I wanted to do. So I applied for it and thank God I got in. And the journey has been so amazing because I got to network with a lot of women in similar fields, in going through similar challenges.
Tuvelihle Ndlovu is the program's implementing partner and coordinator. Ndlovu is a banker by profession, but also runs her own organization providing training to business people. She knows how difficult it is for women in particular to succeed in business.
One thing that I experienced when I was working in the banking sector was that women actually faced like a plethora of challenges when it came to accessing finance. Issues to do with lack of collateral. Most of the collateral is actually owned by the men, and obviously systematic issues like women generally, in terms of inheritance, they are not poised to inherit much. So this would then degenerate into them failing to actually access credit. And this is why I then set up an organization called Person Point Africa to actually train women and help them to become bankable.
Public Diplomacy Officer Rebecca Archer-Nepper of the U.S. Embassy in Harare tells VOA she considers the Academy one of the embassy's most important programs as it helps women participate in the mainstream economy.
One of the great things about women entrepreneurs is they are helpful. They reinvest the money in their communities, in their families. All of the women who are participating here, they support each other throughout their coursework. They share their experiences, and that camaraderie will help their businesses grow.
The Academy of Women Entrepreneurs program, which began in 2020, received $47,000 this year from the embassy. Besides the training, participants also become eligible for and are coached on how to apply for funding from the United States African Development Foundation, a program that supports small and medium-sized startups run by women on the African continent. For VOA, I am Kudzanai Musengi in Bulawayo.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.